Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast, sponsored by Betfred. It's post-match after United have managed to stumble away. Stumble the right word? I don't know.
Yeah,
it wasn't probably the most prettiest of games, but United are in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Unlike Erik ten Hag, we've rested some of our regular stalwarts today, so you literally just stuck with me, John Ashton, and Stu Edwards. And you can listen to some of our musings about the game and a few other things that are going on in the world of United.
It's all you, mate. I'm saying fuck all.
Well, luckily, Stu, you're always very argumentative, so hopefully we should get something out of it. If not, I'll have to play devil's advocate for a bit, if you do agree with me on anything. United have managed to get through against a dogged but pretty poor Everton team. We've probably made hard work of it ourselves rather than anything Everton did. But, Stu, just happy to be through.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was always a potential banana skin. You know, it's okay saying Everton have been shit and all the rest of it, and you know, they conceded four the other night at home to Brighton, and you know, the fans obviously are calling for the board more than I think Lampard, and I think that was quite clear. It was quite evident tonight. You know, you're never sure in situations like this what the team, you know, are the team playing for the manager, as you know, as the manager lost the dressing room based on that 90 minutes tonight. They are playing for Lampard. This fucker's not going to let me in. One second. Are you going to let me in?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
what are you pointing at? Sorry, I'm just having an argument with somebody.
So we'll just pad the podcast out with some road rage today.
So I think they are playing for Lampard. So obviously, you know, they're disappointed in obviously what's gone on in the transfer market, maybe, or what's available. But you know, Everton as a club, they're going in the right direction, I think. You know, they've got a new stadium on the horizon. And on another day, they could have, you know, possibly got a draw and a replay tonight. You know, we weren't at our best, and I think we more, you know, went down to their level, I think, more than they stepped up to like our current level, I think. So yeah, overall, I think, going back to your initial question, pleased to go through and be in the hat for the next round.
Yeah, I agree with that, because obviously with the way they played the other night, it was kind of like the worst thing that could have happened, because it was always going to get a little bit of a reaction, wasn't he? You know, and put the foot in. Ten Hag's team tonight, from my own personal opinion, was that we've played two games a week since we've come back. Big game obviously next Saturday, so I thought that, you know, I thought maybe every player would sort of start one game between this and the other game. Maybe seven or eight of the first team play today, and three or four playing on Tuesday. But he went with a pretty strong team, didn't he, Stu?
Yeah,
arguably the best one he had available.
Yeah, the only one I was surprised maybe not to see start was Martinez. I thought it would have been pretty much the starting 11, barring any injuries, etc., tonight that would start against City, sort of like in 8 days' time. But yeah, you know, like you just said, not far off it really. Martinez did come on, but obviously he's you know, he's feeding him back in slowly after his World Cup adventure. So yeah, and obviously Tuesday will be different again. It's like, you know, they're a lower league team. We should be able to mix it up. Goalkeeper, again, with what's happened with obviously the new, you know, the new transfer, where does that leave Tom Heaton? So would De Gea start on Tuesday simply because it may be a bit too soon for, you know, for Jack to start in net? I don't know. So that's the only one for Tuesday really, which is a bit interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't seem to like resting players that much really, does he? I mean, in fairness, the team looks fitter than it ever does. You know, maybe it is something that's in the mind. We've got some momentum. I think that's 14 wins in the last 17. We've won every game since coming back from the World Cup. No one's actually scored, other than today, no one had scored against us. So, he's building momentum and probably doesn't want that to stop, but do you think it could come back to haunt us at some point later on in the season?
Yeah, you can't help thinking, you know, February, March time, if some players are playing pretty much 90 minutes every week, it could obviously hit us then, which is obviously that's the worst time possible, maybe when you're in the running for trophies or, you know, quarterfinals, semi-finals or whatever. But time will tell. Obviously, we've got a bit of a squad. It's, you know, it's not as strong as it could be. But obviously, the likes of, you know, McFred, who obviously will probably play Tuesday. You know, both came off the bench tonight. Maguire, you'd expect to play, obviously, on Tuesday.
I want to bet on it. He's probably got a reserve left-back playing centre-half or something ahead of him.
Possibly, yeah. So, yeah, time will tell. A lot of football to be played. And some, you know, some players have played, you know, a lot of football. Am I right in saying Bruno's suspended for Tuesday?
I think he is. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So
yeah.
that's good in a way. He gets a rest and ready for Saturday, hopefully.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, in typical me fashion, I've cursed Casemiro after saying that, you know, every game is an 8 or 9, and went and put in a 5 today because he did look leggy. Some of his passing was a bit off, and I think the manager did the right thing taking him off and giving him a bit of a rest today because, I mean, you know, everyone's human. You can have a bad game from time to time, but he did look like a player who went quite far in a World Cup, you know, played a lot of minutes, and it kind of took its toll. So I don't expect him to start on Tuesday.
No, he obviously doesn't like the FA Cup. He'll just be man of match in every Premier League, hopefully, that'll do. But no, again, his standards that he's set recently, obviously, that's why it's more noticeable. I think you're a bit harsh giving him a 5. But he was possibly at fault for the first goal. I think he was after a free kick, wasn't he, on the edge of the box? Maybe a bit.
He went down a bit easily.
So yeah. So yeah, you know, again, it's good that we're able to have that conversation. We've still won 3-1, and our best player in recent weeks, along with probably Rashford, you know, in December, or end of December into January. That's why we're having this conversation, because obviously it shone tonight that he wasn't an 8 or a 9, he was only a 5 or 6.
which in recent years would probably still make you our best midfielder, but
yeah,
it just shows the standards have raised a little bit.
Exactly.
So onto the game. United made a very bright start, got an early goal. Could have scored another couple before Everton scored out of the blue.
You're going to tell me the last time we scored in the third minute, aren't you?
I've no idea.
Fucking hell,
yeah.
John.
Absolutely no idea. It's a great question, actually. We never seem to start games that quickly, though, do we?
Was it Leeds at home in COVID?
God, honestly, I'm going to have to take that one away. Someone can maybe
McTominay
tweet us.
Twice in 6 minutes.
He did score early doors, didn't he? Yeah, but it's a good question, that.
Yeah, it was a very decent start, and you thought, you know, especially what's happened again with Everton recently, that the floodgates would open and it would be like, you know, cruising 3-0 at half time, and it didn't really turn out that way. Again, just a bit of a strange game in some respects. We can't legislate for the equaliser.
Just sloppy moments that just kind of summed it up.
Yeah,
you know,
there was
some loose finishing at the other end when we perhaps could have done better. And then obviously whatever De Gea was trying to do, it I've absolutely no idea what he was trying to do with it. But so obviously they got back into the game. I mean, other than that, they didn't really threaten, did they?
No.
And then we got the goal.
It was always one of them. We looked very comfortable. But I wasn't even, you know, when you stood there and you think sometimes someone's going to hit you on the counter attack, and they did a couple of times, but again, it was, you know, nothing major. They've had obviously an offside goal. That took it to 2 each, disallowed. That decision was very quickly by VAR, so it must have been quite well off by the looks of it. And obviously we've got the third, which none of us have seen.
Yeah, obviously that was a penalty, so we'll leave that to the listeners to make their own mind up on that one, on what happened with that one. But obviously with VAR these days, I'm sure it was a penalty. But Rashford got the goal, scored in every game since he's come back after the World Cup, set the other two up. It'll probably be, even for you, Stu, who likes to be Mr. Contrary when it comes to the Man of the Match award, which you will come to at the end, but that's probably the easiest one we'll have all season, isn't it?
We're not having Man of the Match, it's FA Cup.
Person of the match, then, sorry.
Person of the match, yeah, exactly. Player of the match. He's on fire. He's a bit very close to being unplayable, I think, at times. And the only one with any, you know, any purpose and wanting, and it didn't always come off. On at least 2 or 3 occasions, he was trying to take on 3 or 4 blue shirts, and you know, you've got to be very special or have a little bit of luck as well to get past 3 or 4 players, haven't you? But he was the only one trying to drive the team forward and trying to come up with something. So you don't mind seeing that, and where he's doing it, but you know, if you do lose it, it's in areas of the pitch where, you know, you shouldn't get hurt from it, and you know, he's doing that on the left wing. He's trying to go into the box. Obviously he he created a chance, obviously, for Cody's own goal. So, yeah, he's all round.
And Anthony's goal as well. He set both of them up.
Of course, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I actually missed that cross because I looked at my phone trying to text you. But no, I saw Anthony put it in at the back post. But yeah, so he's had another great night. And again, we've said last week on the podcast last week that if he gets injured,
well, I was just about to say should we? And I don't want to be the merchant of doom when, like I said, we're in such good form. I think there's 6 or 7 wins on a row. Like I said, 14 wins out of 17. Are we just a little bit over reliant on him when it comes to goals? Because again, I don't want to get on anyone's case, and obviously Anthony's got a goal and took it well. But one of the things that makes Rashford so great is the fact that he's so unpredictable. He can come inside, he can go out wide. Anthony, he's literally like, he's wearing, like when you get them things for your kid and you get like the ball's tied to your shoe and but the lace isn't long enough to reach his other foot, because I mean he's one footed and he's almost taking a piss. He must have like 5 ingrowing toenails or something on his right foot.
No, it's ridiculous. It's too ridiculous. It's that, you know, we talk about it, and we've talked about it before. There's not much more we can say apart from he's, you know, completely 101% left footed. Something's got to change there. You know, he's never going to play on the left wing because of Rashford being there, and then obviously and now Garnacho. So, you know, if he continues to play on the right, then he's either got to be really confident cutting in with his left and making stuff happen, or starting to use his right foot. You know, I'm not saying, you know, hit shots from 30 yards. It's clearly, you know, not.
But he looks like my missus does when she kicks a ball, when he uses his right foot. In stilettos.
I'll take your word for it, mate. But no, it's frustrating. And again, we're just repeating ourselves, really. But, you know, 80 million wasn't his fault. He was a 40, 50 million pound player. But let's hope that, you know, things can change and he can be worked on in the coming months and, you know, into next season in regards to doing something at least with his right foot. You know, you never play. You know, we never played gigs, did we, on the right wing? We never played Beckham on the left
yeah,
wing.
Yeah, I mean, football has changed, hasn't it, now, in the fact that they don't really play wingers. You play with these sort of inside forwards, where cutting inside is probably more important than going out wide right, hence the reason they have left-footed people on the right and vice versa. I mean, it is still a worry, though, that I'd say Mason Greenwood's still our best right winger, and he's on remand.
Exactly, so, it's a worry,
it should be a concern. Martial, again, in and out of the game, didn't really threaten that much, did he?
But no, well, the Martial's just been Martial. He's had a couple of good games over Christmas, and then the last two, just again, very average. Just about did enough to stay on the pitch, and I suppose earlier than what he did. But yeah.
Are we being overpicky though after you've just scored 3 again? And, you know, could have scored more and didn't really look like conceding? Because, I mean, what you do have to say is United, they've got a very solid platform now, haven't they? You know, we don't look like we're going to concede many goals. We don't look like we're going to score that many either, but it's something to build on. You'd rather have a solid defence, I think, and then build on it going forward, because we're probably 2 players away from, you know, imagine if you could add Harry Kane or someone to that team.
Exactly, yeah.
You wouldn't be a million miles away, would you?
No, exactly. And obviously Lampard was never going to come and attack us tonight. They sat so deep, even deeper than Forest did last week. They were like almost in their own half, you know, easily just let us have the ball at the back. And like I said, they threatened a couple of times. They had a couple of counter-attacks second half, but that we were never really going to, you know, put any pressure on the back four. And that's, I think, why Luke Shaw is looking very comfortable there, because obviously the 2 or 3 games he's played there, let's be honest, you know, they're not the most potent up front, were they? So it would be different against, you know, City, for example, next week.
You know what, I think we do miss Shaw on the left, though, as well. When he does play on the left, we certainly miss his attacking.
Yeah,
up. I mean,
because again,
Balassi is a young player,
he's another
he gets
one.
Stuck in, but he doesn't really offer you much going forward, does he, that certainly
yeah.
Shaw does.
He's another one who's doing okay, young lad, obviously, and all the rest of it. Don't, you know, get on his case too soon. But
he's firmly a backup, isn't he? At the minute,
yeah, who came in and did well and, you know, got stuck in, but now he's just, again, not, you know, defending, but not doing much, like you said, over the halfway line. So yeah, there's 2 or 3 players, like you said. You know, we are probably being overcritical. We'd have certainly took 3-1 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
Before kickoff, Everton. You know, they've got bigger fish to fry. Lampard's probably not that bothered. I don't think he was ever going to get sacked unless they got beat like 8-0 tonight or something. But, you know, they need to concentrate on the league. But we obviously I've got the momentum going into again another cup game on Tuesday, and going back to obviously the conversation about who's going to play. You know, we've talked about, you know, Maguire coming in and Bruno obviously not playing, and possibly the keeper being changed. For me, I wouldn't start Rashford.
Yeah,
I don't think you can possibly get him anywhere near an injury. Going well,
I expect to see a weaker side, but with a strong bench, I think would be the aim. I think for that.
Yeah.
One,
so does Alanga start again?
We don't have many options up front.
No, that's the problem. So does Alanga start, or does Martial start up front on his own again? Obviously, you can start Garnacho on the left. Who knows? You can play on the right. Would you play Anthony? Probably. You probably would. Try and give him some confidence. Yep. You'd like to think he can do something against Charlton. So yeah, but I think maybe four or five changes, rightly so, going from tonight into Tuesday before the game next Saturday.
It's January, so as we know, the transfer window is wide open. I mean, obviously the club are in the process of being sold, so I can't imagine that they're keen to get the chequebooks out to sign players at this point. It looks like we're trying to do loan deals or sort of scrapping around in the basement for somebody's. I mean, there was talk of Giroud. I don't know whether AC Milan would be willing to let him go, obviously, because he's certainly not on loan. It's going to be difficult, though, isn't it, to get anyone in of any real quality to play up there that's going to give you a different option.
Yeah, the other one, obviously, which you're not quite sure whether to believe, is João Félix, isn't it? Being touted in terms of his, you know, we know who his agent is, so that obviously makes me worry straight away. but yeah, I think it is going to be a loan. I think no one's going to, you know, Kane, for example, you know, if he's ever going to go, and I've said this for the last couple of summers, yeah, I think it would be in this summer coming. I can't see him going anywhere in January. But we do need to definitely get someone in sooner rather than later. I don't want to leave it to the end of January. I think there's too much football to be played, and like I said, we're reliant too much on Rashford to score.
Get Gallo back, maybe. Larson?
Probably not. I think I'd rather have you up front.
Oh, you're not seeing me running these days, Stu. Obviously, man of the match, we're all pretty much in unison over who was the best player by.
Yeah.
By some distance today. Marcus Rashford, fantastic
Absolutely.
Form. And, you know, keep it up, because he really does look unplayable at the minute. And, you know, whatever's going on with him, fitness-wise and his confidence, I think he's proven a lot of people wrong. And some people right that said we wanted to stick with him. He's certainly our best player at the minute and our best attacker.
Who do you want to win Sunday, John?
Sunday? What's happening on Sunday?
Chelsea.
Oh, it's City Chelsea. Well, yeah, you know Chelsea, obviously, all day long, wouldn't you?
They're not going to, are they? Unfortunately.
No, I mean, you watched that game last night. It's an interesting point that you just come to that, but obviously it will probably be different when the derby comes. But I've watched City the last couple of games and they don't really look that convincing. You know?
No.
They don't look the team to fear that perhaps we do at times.
No.
Is this going to be more down to United? I mean, obviously we'll probably touch on this on Tuesday night, but is it more going to be how United apply themselves next week? Because if you get stuck into them, you know, if you play at a tempo and you don't sit off them and look afraid like we did, they get a blat, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure, like yourself, you know a few blues. I've spoke to a couple in you know, the last couple of weeks since coming back after the World Cup, and they've just said literally what you've just said. They've uffed and puffed and they've not been themselves. You know, they got the win last night, two substitutions. You could say, you know, a great your first time ball from Grealish, and obviously Mahrez has got to attack the back post. We're not quite sure what Kepa was doing, but that's another story. But, you know, they've got the result. They've gone down there. It wasn't a great game. But Ireland, I don't think had a shot on target.
No, he barely touched the ball.
Exactly. But is that because De Bruyne is off the boil a little bit?
Well,
because when De Bruyne is obviously not on song.
Do you know what? It's interesting you say that, though, because I argued for podcast after podcast last year when everyone was, you know, obviously raving over Ronaldo and his goal tally and where would we be without him, you know, this, that and the other.
Yeah.
And I argued that the goals he scored are goals that other team players would have scored, and City kind of are backing that up for me, because Haaland's got, what's he got, 27 this season?
Something like that, yeah.
But they've not scored more goals than they would have done last year.
He scored,
you know,
more.
Your likes of your Mahrezes and your De Bruyne's aren't scoring the goals, and I sometimes think it's great having this focal point striker, and you can sit there and say, oh, you know, we need this striker, and if you had him, but those goals don't come in addition to the goals you're getting.
No.
More often than not, they come as a replacement to, and all those other players, like, and if the same thing happened with United, Fernandez's goal tally dropped.
Yeah.
You know, Rashford scored nothing, and I think similar's happening to City.
Yeah,
but
not.
Obviously, I mean, he's got as many more than Ronaldo did by Christmas, but it will be on a lesser effect. But I don't think it necessarily makes you a better team playing the way they do. I think they become a little bit one dimensional.
Yeah, because he's not that interested 15 yards outside the box, is he? Put it in the box, and 9 times out of 10 he's going to score. He's lethal. He's got long legs. He's a big lad, and he's done that so far this season. But like you said, one dimensional. If it's definitely the right phrase, I think, to use for watching City over the last couple of weeks. De Bruyne, obviously, brilliant. You know, brilliant crossing, brilliant pinpoint crosses, passes. I think he put one in last night late on. I think Ake hit the crossbar with an header. But apart from that, if you stop him, he's the one to stop. And there are, I'm not saying, you know, Grealish or Mahrez or Cancelo, if he plays. Other players can obviously, you know, put decent balls in. But, you know, let's be honest, it all revolves around De Bruyne. And if you stop him, and if you've got someone who only feeds off some, you know, balls between like 6 and 10 yards out, which I bet 90% of his goals are for City so far this season, you're going to go a long way to stop them scoring. So I think it is more, obviously it's about that, but not concentrating too much on that. I think it's about what we're doing right as well, like you said, next week. The last thing we want to do is obviously, you know, go 1-0 down after, you know, 10-15 minutes. But I think we just need to get in the faces. Don't give them too much respect. You know, like Everton did there last week.
Yeah.
You know, you're watching Everton tonight, you think, you know, how did they really get a point there? But, you know, things happen, don't they?
Yeah, confident about the rest of the season too, just before I'm in danger of turning this into the City We Stand podcast.
Yeah.
We talked about enough about them knobheads.
Yeah, it'll be interesting in 8 days' time when we know more where we are. We should be in the semi-final of the League Cup, and, you know, we could be, you know, whatever it is, a point behind City.
We could indeed,
like,
yeah.
That,
and,
so.
And obviously Arsenal then the week after as well, which will be obviously another test.
Yeah.
I'll wrap it up there, Stu. Thanks for that. I know it's not the easiest podcast to do, and it's just a pair of us, and not the most inspiring game we've ever done. But thanks to everyone who bought the mag tonight, and also, you know, we've got two more games with this magazine, haven't we? So
yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah, so it's plenty of opportunities to still get this one. Come and say hello to us.
Didn't rain tonight,
so many of you do. You know, we got some good weather, so we were a lot chirpier tonight.
Our next guest is Mark O'Brien. Mark's an Evertonian. He's a really good writer, and he's written some top books on Everton, and he's someone who United We Stand have known and trusted to find a good Everton voice for many, many years. Mark, thanks for joining us on this United We Stand podcast. I realise that the circumstances could be better for Everton.
Yeah, we can probably always say that whenever we speak to you, though, mate. You can't we? So it's all good.
Well, there's been times where you've absolutely hammered Manchester United at Goodison, put four past Manchester United at Goodison. Even last season, came out of Old Trafford and you played really well in the second half. You scored a good goal where Fred was bullied off the ball and you got a 1-1 draw, and that was the beginning. That was the day, I think, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer lost a lot of the match-going fans, and he lost his job a couple of months later. Erik ten Hag is obviously doing well and he's in a pretty secure position at the moment. The fans are right behind him. I can't really say the same about your manager.
Yeah, it's a strange one because it kind of splits opinion, I think, with Lampard. I think what's odd is that everyone likes him as a fella. I think everyone can see he's sincere. Obviously, we stayed up against that like monumental game against Crystal Palace last season, and his celebrations and that, and how much he's bought into the club and stuff like that. So I don't think there's anyone who dislikes him. But then you just look at his record, and there's loads of caveats. There's, you know, you can say, you know, the circumstances of what he took over, what he's dealing with. Obviously, there's financial fair play, loads of stuff. But the stark reality is you look at the record and you think, you know, they don't look like there are three worse teams than Everton in the Premier League right now. So it's difficult. I think people are very much, they want him to get, obviously, always want to get it right. You know, but we've had managers in the past, you know, people just wanted to see the back of him, you know. You know the ones, you know what I mean? Even good managers, you know, there's a lot of people wanted to see the back of Marco Silva. It turned out, you know, a really good manager. Koeman, no one was sorry to see the end of him and stuff like that. I think Lampard, I think people really, really genuinely want him to do well, but his record suggests that you just look at it and you think, if you're the owner, you say, well, at the moment it looks like we're going down. If we change the manager, we might stay up. So that's the eternal Everton decision. We get to this time of year, it seems, and this decision's always being made. So, yeah, it's difficult.
You mentioned the owner. There's been a lot of criticism of the owner, of your board. I can't figure it out. You've spent so much money and you seem to have got worse. Is it the recruitment? Is it the constant changing of managers? You're finally building a new stadium, which looks absolutely brilliant on the banks of the River Mersey. I had a little bit of insight into your club a year ago, just when Frank Lampard was appointed, and I knew of a manager who also went for the job, and There didn't seem to be any clear decision makers there. It was like a three-way thing where you've got three groups of people briefing against each other almost, and they're in charge of Everton Football Club. It seemed absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, I think that's obviously, as fans, you sort of, you never really know what's going on. Obviously, your insight's a little bit, you know, more, probably, you know, more accurate. I think that's what people think. That is the perception externally. I think they think there's the sort of, well, in the past, it was the director of football. Then you had Bill Kenwright and his sort of power base sort of thing. And then you have the owner who has the ultimate decision. But even beyond that, you don't know how much of it is Alexander Usmanov, because it's, you know, I think everyone pretty much knows that the money, I think pretty certain it comes from him. So that's always been the thing, is like, you know, who ultimately makes the decisions. And I think what happens as well, I think what we're seeing now, when the fans get riled up, they tend to direct it at Bill Kenwright, because Mashiri tends to get away with it to a certain extent, because he is building the stadium and he has put, you know, it's through him that all that money has put in, which, you know, which is what we've wanted down the years. But I think a lack of clear vision. But every time they put something in place, what undoes us ultimately is short-term results on the pitch, because, you know, we get to where we are now. You're thinking, okay, we've got a new director of football, we've got Lampard in as manager, but because of the results on the pitch, you know, there's a chance that'll all get ripped up again and we'll start again, and the spiral continues. I think at some point, and I think Ancelotti was the one where I think he thought, right, I've made my decision, I've gone out, I've made him the third highest paid manager in the world or something ridiculous. He's the guy. We'll get, you know, no one can argue with his track record. I'm going to back him. This is the one. And he left for Real Madrid. And I think that was the... And I think he'd already decided he was leaving before he was going there. But I think that was ultimately... So I think it's always like they say, that the road to hell is sort of paved with good intentions. Good intentions and open letters to the board it's paved with. And I think most of the decisions have been made, you know, at the time... Because we kind of have a thing now where people are looking at Brighton and Brentford and going, that's who we should be run like. And you think, that's, you know, you're saying that now because it looks like we're going to go down. But people weren't saying that when we were buying James Rodriguez. You know what I mean? And things like that. People were all into it. But the landscape's changed now. So the owner's done a lot of good. The stadium, as you say, looks magnificent. Ultimately, he's backed to the hilt managers who have spent his money really badly. I think that's ultimately the case. You look at the players they've bought and they just overpaid for some players. You just look at them and think they won't, you know, you couldn't give them away. So that's the crux of it. We overpaid for really average players.
You took 9,000 to Old Trafford for the cup match. What did you make of the game?
Do you know what? I thought we were going to get humiliated. I thought after the Brighton game, I actually said on my blog, you know, if they're going to sack Lampard, which I think they still might, they should do it before the game, because I thought there was a possibility we were going to go and get humiliated and he was going to be made to sort of stand on the sideline while his team gets ripped apart, which this Man United team fully capable of. And in fairness, I think they really tried. I think, you know, we've seen us embarrassed at United so many times that the early goal in, it would have been so easy for them to drop their heads. And, you know, I'm always a bit dubious when fans say, I don't mind us losing as long as we have a go, because I always think, you don't mean that. But I think they did. I think they actually went down fight. They went down, you know, throwing A-makers and saying, do you know who I am? A little bit, you know what I mean? Like a fella who gets battered but still has a go. And I don't know whether that might have put doubts into the owner's mind now, because I was convinced, put on my blog, I said, he's sacked. But I think the way they try, because a new manager's only going to come in at the same players and get them to run around a bit. And you think, that's what they did last night. So I don't know if he might have saved his job. Could be completely wrong. By the time this comes out, he could be sacked and we could be all hailing Sean Dyche.
I was told of a meeting with Everton's directors after the game at Old Trafford. But, you know, that could have been to discuss the coffee in the vending machine. I somehow doubt it.
Doubt it, yeah.
Everton fans, I mean, I respect Everton as a club. I love going to Goodison. I wonder how much you will miss Goodison. But I've seen a few people come out and criticise Everton fans for being too critical, for jumping on the players' back too quickly. Is that fair or unfair?
That's a difficult one, and that's a constant debate among the fans themselves, because people are saying, like, because I think what people say is, you know, if you go to Bournemouth, you go away to Bournemouth twice in a week, and you concede seven goals, no one's going to like start throwing flowers to you and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think the players lead it. I think I've always said this. I said if the players, not even playing well, but if you can see the effort and you can see them having a go, getting the ball forwards, that was the thing. I think that always does for managers at Everton. Happened with Martinez, I think with Lampard a bit, he struggled because he hasn't had a centre forward. If they don't get the ball forward, if they're not attacking, if we're sort of messing around with it at the back, almost waiting for the inevitable balls up, I think the crowd just gets riled up really quick. And, you know, it does become, I would say, I think it is fair, I think it's true of all football fans, but I think Everton probably does get toxic quite quickly. I think that whole route to toxicity, I think, is a well-trodden one. And I think the cycle's getting quicker and quicker with managers now. We're just getting less and less patient. So I'd say it probably is fair, but you can't blame people for being pissed off.
You've had 10 managers. I know there's a couple of caretaker ones in there since David Moyes left for Goodison for a football club whose name I forget. big names in there, but some of them seem bizarre decisions. I remember Rafa Benitez going, and just the decision to appoint him really seemed to divide Everton fans because of what he'd done in Liverpool. And he lasted 5 minutes.
Yeah, that was the most bizarre one, I think. And you know what I will say is, I think a lot of fans give him a chance, because a lot of people just didn't, and that was to be expected. But a lot of people said, if he's our manager, we'll be supportive. You know, so sometimes I think he makes out he wasn't given a chance, but his record was poor. We started off all right, people got behind him, but it was always going to happen. When he hit the inevitable blip, he just had no goodwill left. You know, there was just nothing in the bank for him because of who he was, and that was always going to end in tears. The bizarre thing was, he was allowed to, like, before he got sacked, he basically forced out the director of football. I think it's him or me. The director of football went, and then he did a load of transfer business as well, and then got sacked a few days later, which goes back to the initial who makes the decisions. The guy who's just about to get sacked allowed to do stuff like that. So no wonder we end up in trouble.
How do you think of David Moyes now? Because he was there for 11 years, over 500 matches.
I don't want him back, because that's been sort of mooted. I have utmost respect for what he did when he was at Everton. A lot of people, some of my close friends, my dad, could never forgive him about the way he left, because he clearly didn't tell the truth about... he was mad. The big thing for a lot of people is, and this is true, he managed Everton against Man United when he knew he was going to become the Man United manager, which that left a really sour taste in the mouth for people. I listened to him on a podcast recently, the Danny Donaghy one, and he sounds like yesterday's man. I have utmost respect for what he did at Everton. I thought he'd do great at United. I've always said, I think his biggest problem at United is he didn't make enough changes quickly enough. I think if he'd have made a load of changes, he could have said, this is a team in transition. But he didn't, and he got accused of, well, he had the champions, and they turned to a bag of shite, which was a team on the slide already. That's just my opinion. But I think he's the oldest manager in the Premier League now. There's been talk of him coming back. I think that would be not of Rafa Benitez proportions, but I think, again, I don't think he'd have any goodwill with a lot of people. So as soon as he hits an inevitable blip, people would be on his back, and I think that would be... I'd hate his legacy to be that.
You've got a couple of Manchester United players there. You've bought a lot of Manchester United players in recent years.
Yeah.
How's James Garner doing?
He's hardly played. He's been injured. He's the one I was quite excited by. And I know we hear Forest fans. I think he was their player of the season when they came up. And he was exactly what we needed. The impression I got, sort of, someone along the lines of Andre Gomez. I know he's a player you said would be good for us and was initially brilliant. I think he's a lovely footballer, but he got the injury and just couldn't run anymore. Someone who could get his head up, you know, control the pace of the game and stuff like that. But we've hardly seen him, and I think he's hurt his back. I think he's due back in February, but hopefully he can come back and have an impact. Because he looks a nice player.
Yeah, he is. He's a good player, definitely highly rated at Old Trafford. What's your rivalry like with Liverpool? How is that changing?
It's always a difficult one. Obviously, in terms of, you know, we don't compete with them on the pitch. They are, you know, they're light years ahead of us. What Klopp's done is amazing. You can't deny that. You know, some of the, not the moment, but I mean, when they're at the best, some of the football just outstanding. Do you know what I mean? They were really good to watch. Dead exciting. You have to take your hats off to him. I think he's a really good manager. In terms of with fans, it's always a weird one because we laugh at them a lot. They've won everything, but you just know they're just so weird, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? And they become like a massive parody of themselves. Loads of my mates, Liverpool supporters, they cringe at the way some of their fans are. Everyone's got knob fans, but agree they've got more than most, especially on social media and stuff like that. They're just absolutely bizarre. So I think we just laugh at them. As people say, you just couldn't make them up. I think that's, you know, so despite everything, you wouldn't swap. I wouldn't swap with them for a minute because they're just a weird cult.
I wouldn't say that all Manchester United fans on social media are not weird either, to be honest. I see a lot of similarities with Manchester United's fan base and Liverpool's fan base, at least on social media.
Right, okay. I mean, I can imagine.
Yeah, and use the word cringe. It's exactly the same.
But it's not even funny. Yeah, not surprises you now, though, does it? You see stuff and you go, yeah, it's a cop-out being weird on the internet, you know what I mean? And, like going out the way to say, how much it matters to him and stuff like that. And, all right, mate, just go to the match and shut up.
This means more.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. And it's this means more, and it's like Ken from Oxfordshire, something like that, on the posters they had in town. They were amazing. Yeah. Fuck off.
Your new ground, what's the capacity going to be, like 55?
About that, yeah. I think, yeah, low 50s, yeah.
So that is a significant upgrade on Goodison. And
yeah,
it's what Anfield is at the moment. I know they're making it bigger, but Everton really should be one of the top eight Premier League teams.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been people saying it should be, you know, it should be bigger. I don't know. It looks amazing, and I think we'll fill it in the Championship.
Do you think you'll go down, really?
I think this is the... I look at the team, and in the past I've thought, okay, those players shouldn't be where they are. But I look at it now, and you look at the teams who come up, and, you know, they're all well-coached. Everyone's got money. You know what I mean? Everyone's team's full of internationals. In the past, there was always just some shite you had to be better than, but I just look at it now and you think there's no reason why that team shouldn't go down. We have no divine right. I think in the past you think, you know, we'd spend our way out of it. We can't do that because of financial fair play, which is bizarrely a thing that was brought in to stop people getting into the top six. We'll probably relegate Everton, and, you know, people will say, well, deservedly so, probably. But I think we could this year, yeah, unless there has to be... They have to improve drastically. The only thing is, we've just slipped into the bottom three. You know, we could get out with a couple of ways. The fact that we're not adrift after being as appalling as we are is amazing. But you look at, like, you know, Wolves are far better than us. Few of them down there, you think Villa will get away. You know, I'm not sure we're any better than Leeds. And you just think something's going to have to change a lot, or I think this could be the one.
And yet we were saying very similar things a year ago. At one point, in maybe it was April, you looked doomed.
We did. The main difference being between now and then is we had Brazil's number 9 playing for us. You know, you think of some of the games, you won't remember, but like we played Chelsea at home, and like he closed down Aspilicueta. It was like a lost cause. Won the ball, scored the goal, beat Chelsea at home. We stayed up by the skin of our teeth, and we took... You know, we sold the Brazil number 9, and this fella's become a bit of a totem for us being shite, and it's a bit unfair on him. He doesn't get a pass, you know. But we replaced Brazil's number 9 with Neil Mopay. You know what I mean? What do you think is going to happen?
One of the funniest things I did see on social media last year was Brazil's number nine on the day of the Champions League final. Somebody did mocked him up as a coach driver who turned up to not pick some Liverpool fans up who were travelling to Paris. And it's a sort of thing that people might laugh about online, but he actually got behind it and retweeted it. he was really...
Well, they did what's it called, didn't they? It was a bit of a shitty trick. Someone did a fake, an Evertonian, didn't he, like, advertise for a fake, for a fake trip, travel there. And it was, honestly, it was getting retreated all night. Like, they were still there waiting, like, for hours. Like, they were all night, and just more and more clips of them going, I don't think he's coming, you know. And then, which is a bit tight, like, you know what I mean? But it was fucking funny. And then, someone had mocked him, because I think they put the driver's name, I think they put as Richard Allison as well. They were waiting for Richard Allison, the driver, to come, who funny enough, never come. And they were stabbed by the rocket for about 8 hours until he realised he wasn't coming. And and then he retweeted the picture of him in like the on the bus's outfit, like I'm gonna get you, Butler.
I thank you for your time, Mark. This is the United We Stand podcast. Our next one will be out after the Charlton game at Old Trafford on Tuesday night. Charlton, of course, are managed by Salford Red Dean Holden. So they've sold 9,500 tickets, the same as Everton. Manchester United will be going for an 8th consecutive win. Thanks, Mark, and thanks everyone for listening.
We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.